At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Morning, morning, morning.
It's the boss.
I call shots like a boss.
In the gloss.
My lip gloss, I only rock clear.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow.
And Carla Dawson.
I got that. Sunshine in my pocket.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome in. I'm David Gow, the boss, sitting next to Carla Dawson, the boss. How are you?
I'm good because we're World Series bound here in Houston.
Houston, Texas
we're getting
is
it started.
A buzz.
Tuesday.
They are going to the World Series. The Astros are. We got Z-Pac behind the glass. How you doing, Kevin?
Doing all right, you know. I'm trying to get into World Series mode myself because I'm a little scarred from the first round with what the Astros did, but getting back into the flow now.
Okay, good. And you might be a little scarred from Tampa Bay, Chicago yesterday.
I don't even want to talk about that. It's just let's forget about that one.
Well,
then salt in the wounds, and we've got Matt Nagy on the COVID-19 list. Let's just keep it rolling in Chi-Town.
He's our long-suffering Chicago representative here in Houston.
The Bulls are 3-0, though. I'll have to point that out. So we're off to a good start there. Yeah.
You got to take what works in your city.
Well, the sports calendar and tonight's show is jam-packed because we will talk.
We're at that apex. We got it all happening.
Yes, it's all good right now. We'll talk World Series later in hour number two. The NFL had a big weekend. So many interesting storylines. I really enjoyed so many of the games. We need to unpack those. And we are sitting here in Houston, Texas, where Deshaun Watson trade must be coming soon, right?
Come on. Yes. Let's hope so.
Texans have been in limbo land for a long time with Deshaun.
They're playing so well, though. Oh, whoops. No, they're not.
They made history yesterday.
They did make history. Do tell.
Well, they got 5 points. First time in a long time ever that a team has finished with 5 points in a game?
Isn't that special?
That can't be right.
I am so glad that Cal McNair and David Culley and Nick Caserio and Jack Easterby, they have put together a beautiful roster to make history with 5 points in a beatdown by the Arizona Cardinals, facing two players, impact players, that were given away by the Texans to Arizona in DeAndre Hopkins and J.J. Watt. Kind of a in-your-face situation.
All right, when we come back, we are going to look at the biggest surprises of yesterday. And I've got three headlines, three candidates. It's the fall of the Chiefs, the rise of the Bengals, or now the question, are the Raiders a better team than they were 3 weeks ago?
The Grudenless Raiders?
Yes, we'll take a look at that. All that more when we return here on the Sports Map Radio Network.
It's the boss.
And the gloss.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow.
And Carla Dawson.
All right, yesterday's NFL was really intriguing to me, and there were at least three monster surprises at the top of the list, perhaps, but we could debate what fits at the top of the list. But near the top of the list has to be the fall of Kansas City. How quickly they have faded from you. They are 3 wins, 4 losses on the season. 7 games in. We're almost halfway through the season. And this team has a losing record. It's preposterous. It was unthinkable. And Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes have got to figure this out. They've suffered from a lot of injuries not so much injuries, turnovers. And you can fix turnovers. But what's
they
really
leave the NFL in giveaways and in offensive penalties. That's sloppy football.
Okay, that's sloppy. And presumably, Andy Reid, who's been around forever and is really savvy, will figure out how to reduce the turnovers, how to reduce the penalties. But what's most alarming to me is just the way they're getting beaten at the line of scrimmage. They're getting beaten up physically, and the Titans clobbered them.
No, it's so true. They've had 11 turnovers already this season. Mahomes has himself. He had 15 combined in the previous two seasons. I mean, it is really – this is how bad it is. He is tied with what quarterback for the most interceptions in the NFL right now? Let me give you a hint.
Yes.
The last name is not Efron, even though he looks like him.
Oh, love him. The man who's injured now?
Yes. He's tied with Patrick Mahomes and Zach Wilson are tied for the most interceptions in the NFL right now.
Well, and they're on track. They're going to hit that Jameis Winston level. I mean, remember
the
bad
30
season?
30, yeah.
Yeah, it's just preposterous to think. So, yes, Mahomes has been sloppy with the football, but I really do think that's fixable. But one thing that I do perceive, and I've seen it now, so I don't think he trusts his O-line. I think he's nervous, and he's not waiting for plays to develop. He's bailing out in anticipation that his O-line is going to let him down. And some of that's very justified because the Chiefs' offensive line is losing the battle up front on a pretty consistent basis. But sometimes it's not justified, but he's bailing out anyway, trying to make a big play, and then he'll try to squeeze the ball in with some exotic sidearm throw.
Well, and it's showing up in his stats. I mean, he had 206 yards yesterday, but an interception, a fumble lost, and this was his first career game without a touchdown. The Chiefs were only able to put up 3 points yesterday.
Well, and that point total, where they are now, the lowest of the Mahomes pro or college career. And it's also the lowest of Andy Reid's time in Kansas City. So this is a really dark season for those two.
It's a tough time. And you mentioned, you know, the lack of trust that Mahomes has in his O-line. But their defense, that has always been their weak spot, even in their championship years. But the defense is really one of the worst in the league. They can't stop the run. They can't stop play action pass. The defense has allowed 405 points. It's the fifth most in the NFL. I mean, they are abhorrent.
Yeah, they're bad. And, of course, they're made worse because of the offense's turnovers.
Yes,
the
yes.
offense isn't holding onto the ball and keeping the defense off the field. So it's the demise of the offense has made the defense even worse.
And you know when you're having a real bad day as Patrick Mahomes? When you wake up and you realize, dang, Derrick Henry threw more touchdown passes than I did yesterday. Did you see that in the Wildcats?
I saw that. The Tim Tebow-style pass.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, he had more touchdown passes than Mahomes yesterday.
All right.
Oh,
well, credit the Titans because Derrick Henry, he is a stud. We've known that, and he's playing at the top of his game. And the Titans have won 5 of 6. They had that one head-scratching loss to the Jets. But look, the last 2 weeks, they've beaten the Bills and the Chiefs, two teams that were considered elite. I mean, you have to give the Titans credit there. They came out, they said they had a three-point plan against the Chiefs. One, to affect or rattle Mahomes. Two, to allow
they
nothing. Yeah, and they did that. To allow nothing deep, which they did.
Right.
And to be the more physical team. And their safety said, we knew we could not win a track meet, but we wanted to make it bloody. And the Titans just outmanned them.
27-3 is bloody.
Yeah.
And, you know, credit Mike Vrabel. I mean, he is a defensive-minded guy. But he's gritty, and he's tough, and he's got his team playing just like that.
Mm. Yeah, it's almost an old-school win.
It
You've
is.
Got the
I
new modern passing offense with the Chiefs. They are best in class at this new era of offensive passing football, and this was an old-school gritty win with a team whose offense is built around the running game and the play action. And this was a real day for the – I mean, the Titans now need to be on that short list – every
and
week
in that very difficult AFC South.
Well,
kidding.
Yeah. It seems every week we have to revise our sort of top four teams in the AFC. Who are those four teams that we can expect to be there in the final analysis? And now, this week at least, we're going to put the Titans in that realm. They deserve to be in that realm.
They sure
you
do.
Have to pull the Chiefs back. I mean, here you
well,
sit.
Well, they're 3-4. They're under 500. So
They're Chiefs not in that consideration set
in the
right
AFC
now.
West. Yeah.
I mean, there are questions now. Will the Chiefs actually make the playoffs, which is a preposterous thought, or it would have been
it
a preposterous
is.
Thought just, well, 4 weeks ago, we never would have dreamed that they wouldn't be here. I mean, the second
they
big...
They still might.
No, the second surprise here is the Raiders. And the Raiders, of course, when John Gruden had his scandal and when he had to go off, it looked like that could be disaster for that team. And interestingly, just to think about this connection between the Chiefs and the Raiders, I never would have thought that the biggest competition for the AFC West and the division title might be between the Raiders and the Chargers.
Who'd have thunk it?
And not the Chiefs. But the Raiders right now, they've played the last couple weeks, they were seemingly better without John Gruden. How do you explain that? Because honestly, I would have thought this was a big-time distraction, one that was somewhat unsurmountable and would certainly set the Raiders back. But they've seemed to have elevated their game, and Derek Carr especially, to a whole other level.
He has taken his leadership role and just run with it. I mean, you look at this because this could be a devastating distraction for any franchise. It's just a devastating situation that happened. But I think Gruden is such a huge personality, and he's tough and he's controlling, and he and Derek Carr, despite what a lot of people think, have really grown into a really great relationship with each other. And so it was devastating for Derek Carr. But what Derek Carr did, which is the most important thing as your franchise QB, your signal caller, your leader in the locker room, you have a job to do. And while he is close to Gruden, and it's really sad, he's not excusing anything that was done, and he's rallying the troops for the cause. It doesn't do anybody good to lament on John Gruden. And I think because he's not there. He's gone, and he rightfully should be gone. What Derek Carr has done, what I think shows what a beautiful turn of events, what redemption has happened in that locker room, you bring in longtime assistant Rick Bisaccia, who has a very reserved way of leading. He's tough. He's their special teams guy. He still is their special teams guy. But he doesn't need that spotlight like Gruden. He doesn't fill a room like that.
Relative to Gruden, he's almost an anonymous presence.
And he likes it that way. He doesn't need it any other way, which that takes some of the air out of the room and allows Derek Carr to fill in where needed. And he's filled in absolutely beautifully. And I couldn't be happier. Yesterday, he had over a 91% completion rate, the second highest in NFL history. He was 31 of 34. At one point, he had 16 straight completions. Oh,
that's
incredible.
He is in sync right now.
He's in sync.
And
he didn't have Darren Waller yesterday. He threw to 9 different receivers. 9. Can you believe that?
Well, the Raiders now sit at 5-2 atop the AFC West. Chargers at 4-2. Chiefs at 3-4. Fascinating time. And so of our big three surprises coming out of yesterday, it was the fall of the Chiefs. The question, the Raiders now maybe being a better team. And then the third is the rise of the Bengals. We're going to have to touch that in a segment and a half to come. We're going to go to break now and tell you that when we come back, we're going to shift gears to college football because we're going to get Jerry Palm on here. He is the CBS senior sports writer and a college football expert.
And we've got a week to go till college football playoffs, the first iteration of the CFP.
Fascinating time in college football. We'll ask him when we come back, amongst other questions. We're going to ask him, do the Oklahoma Sooners really deserve to be the number 4 team in the country? It'll be Jerry Palm up next here on the Sports Map Radio Network.
It's the Boss.
In the Gloss.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow
and Carla Dawson.
When you need auto parts, O'ReillyAuto.com is just a few clicks away. They offer convenient options for you to get your parts quickly. Order online at O'ReillyAuto.com and pick up for free at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store. They'll even bring it out to you curbside, or you can choose to have your parts delivered right to your door with free shipping on most orders over $35. Get your auto parts quickly at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Visit O'ReillyAuto.com. All right, joining us now on the Progressive Insurance guest line is Jerry Palm, CBS Sports senior writer and college football expert. Jerry, welcome to the show. You're on with David and Carla.
How's it going?
Well, we are doing great, and we've been dying to ask you questions about all things college football. Would love to start with the Oklahoma Sooners because Carla's been scratching her head most of this season, and I don't think she's satisfied that the Sooners are ranked as high as number 4 overall. Do they deserve that ranking?
I probably would not put them that high. But, you know, the polls are the polls, and they don't operate on really much in the way of deservedness. I mean, a little bit. But, you know, typically, as long as you're winning, you're gonna hold your spot. And you don't very often see teams get jumped. It happens, but... Oklahoma's still winning, and it doesn't seem to matter how good they look doing it yet. The College Football Playoff Committee may have a different opinion on that.
I sure hope they do, because I've been watching Oklahoma since game one, where they struggled with Spencer Rattler to beat Tulane, for goodness sakes. And I've yet to see a complete game out of the Sooners. I know they've got games with Baylor, Iowa State, and Oklahoma State coming up. Do you see an upset coming out of any of those three?
Oh, I think it's certainly possible. Yeah, Oklahoma has not been so much better than those teams that they can be, you know, they can just look at those games as easy wins. They haven't had an easy win yet. I don't think any game. I mean, even Kansas wasn't an easy win.
No, you know, they were 38.5 point favorites, and they needed a miracle by Caleb Williams to pull it out.
Yeah, the play where he takes the ball away from and they end up with a 13-point win, which, if I'm not mistaken, is their largest margin of victory this season, right?
Mm-hmm. 13. You're right.
Yep. And the first time they've beaten anybody by more than, I want to say, 7 even. So it's a fight every week to get to be undefeated. Although I'm reminded now of, you know, the Ohio State National Championship when they beat Miami in the Fiesta Bowl, in, let's say 2001. That team was winning every week the same way. They hardly ever blew anybody out, and yet they found a way to win a national championship. So I guess you can't count Oklahoma out until somebody beats them.
Wow.
Well, let's shift gears to Cincinnati, another interesting story. Do you see them heading on and making the playoffs?
If they get to 13-0, they have a shot. They don't really control their own fate like a major conference team would. Their fate is going to be tied very closely to Notre Dame's. If Notre Dame's 10-2 or 11-1, that helps Cincinnati a lot. If they fall off a little bit, Cincinnati's going to be lacking a quality win. And that's, you know, when you don't have any, that's hard. And it's usually the thing that holds back the teams like Cincinnati from playoff contention. But the other thing is they need help in the major conferences. They can't have too many undefeated teams. Currently, 4 of the 5 still have at least one undefeated team in there. And if there are 4 undefeated majors, Cincinnati won't make it. But then a 12-1 Alabama, a 12-1 Ohio State would probably also finish ahead of Cincinnati. So they're going to need some help. They're going to need a little bit of chaos. Like undefeated teams in the SEC and the Big Ten would really help, because the one-loss teams in that league have a chance to finish ahead of Cincinnati, even if they're not champions, the 12-1 teams especially.
And speaking of Cincinnati, Luke Fickell, so he's done obviously an incredible job with that program. And the AD that hired him at Cincinnati is now sitting out there in Southern California at USC trying to turn that place around. What are the chances you see, Jerry, that Luke Fickell would head out to USC? And do you think that USC should look in the college coaching carousel, or do they need a big splash out there in Showtime, and do they need to get from the NFL level? What do you see happening out there?
Well, the college to NFL transition and the other way around is a bit of a crapshoot. Doesn't mm-hmm. always work. In fact, seems to work much less often than it doesn't. So college coach, I don't think there's anything wrong with a college coach. That probably should be the preferred route, I think, for USC. Luke Fickell, you could do a lot worse than. He's done a great job at Cincinnati, building that program up to where it's a program. You know, it's not a one-year thing or a two-year thing. They're good every year. And while they haven't won that league every year, he's got a pipeline of talent coming in, and they figure to be competitive in that league for as long as he's there. And so we'll see what happens if and when he leaves. But, you know, they're going to the Big 12, so he's going to a major conference.
Right.
But USC is not the Big 12, and it's not Cincinnati, right? That's a job that if they come calling, you have to really listen. There's going to be good money. There'll be big expectations.
Yep.
But there's also the chance to win because you're in a very fertile recruiting area in Southern California, and you don't have the competition that you'd have, say, at a place like LSU. So, you know, it's certainly Luke Fickell, I think, would be a good choice anywhere that wants to try and hire him. He looks like the real deal in the coaching ranks.
And you mentioned LSU too, Jerry. Who do you like replacing Ed Ogeron?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, it's funny. Some of the names that come up are current SEC coaches like Lane Kiffin.
Oh gosh.
And the SEC. It's funny how that happens in the SEC.
Yes. Then,
you know, Lane Kiffin. Maybe Lane Kiffin will try all 14 jobs before he retires.
I think so. He's on about 12 right now.
It's And James Franklin's name has come up for both of those jobs, USC and LSU. There aren't a lot of places you'd leave Penn State for, but those two would probably be on the list. You know, LSU, I mean, they just won a championship 2 years ago. So, you know, you can win there, and you can win there competing with Nick Saban. So it's possible. It's a more competitive environment for sure at LSU, but there's a lot of talent around. It's going to be an attractive job, and you know, maybe it'll be another SEC coach. Maybe Mike Leach will get that job. That'd be funny.
That's well, another one on his, like, 10th job right now, too.
Yeah, I was thinking you can win there and you can beat Saban as long as you've got Joe Burrow around. He's pretty strong.
Yeah. It's funny. It seems like the coordinators got most of the coaching credit for that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Joe Brady.
More than Ed Orgeron did. And, of course, both coordinators left right after that season, and they haven't quite been the same.
We're talking to Jerry Palm, CBS senior sports writer and college football expert. So let's check in on the Heisman race. Who's your favorite right now?
I haven't got one. I mean, really.
Yeah.
C.J. Stroud at Ohio State, Bryce Young. I mean, there's nobody stepping out and grabbing a hold of the Heisman race. I think it's going to come down to how, as is always the case, how these teams finish and who leads their teams to a college football playoff and possibly a championship. But there really isn't anybody out here right now that's just grabbed a hold of this. And here's how it is. Caleb Williams, the Oklahoma quarterback, has started, what, two games? And people are talking about him for the Heisman race.
Yeah.
So that's what the Heisman race is like right now. People want to see someone step forward and take it, and nobody's done that.
Well, I'll tell you who's not in the Heisman race is Clemson's DJ Uiagalelei, who was benched on Saturday in the loss to Pitt. What has happened to Clemson? Did you see this happening? And is it?
No.
Okay, yeah, I can't figure it out. What do you make of it?
Their biggest problem is they can't block, and now it's in their heads. You know, their inability to score seems to be, you know, just in their heads right now. They can't. They're not playing with confidence. Now you're changing quarterbacks, you know, it's a desperation move, of course, because DJ's a very talented kid, 5-star recruit, right? So it's not like the talent's a problem, and he played well at Notre Dame last year. So it's not just him, although surely he's part of it, but I think the problem starts up front. I don't think they're blocking well enough. They can't run the ball with authority and run to set up the pass, and the teams are able to defend them, and they can't get out of their own way. Fortunately for them, their defense is elite still, so they're in every game.
Right.
But it's got to be frustrating for everybody on the offensive side of the ball at Clemson, because they could be a national championship contender if they could get that thing going. But it's too late now to do that for this year. But the offense is just stunning to watch week after week how dysfunctional it is.
Stunning is a great word, Jerry. I agree with you there.
Talking to Jerry Palm, CBS senior sports writer. Okay, how sold are you on Michigan?
Well, let's see him beat Ohio State. Yeah. But Michigan is off to a great start. They've been dominating. They don't have the big win yet, really, because that division, the four big teams in that division haven't played each other yet. That starts this week. You know, the Big Ten is probably by accident, as it turns out, because nobody knew Michigan State was going to be this good, has set up the schedule so that the Big Ten East is going to be a six-week battle to the end with them starting to play each other. But Michigan looks like the team that they have been under Jim Harbaugh, you know, excluding the pandemic year, that, 9-3, 10-2, lose to Ohio State, maybe somebody else, and go to a pretty good bowl game. And until they beat Ohio State, that's what Michigan looks like.
Yeah, it'll be fascinating to see that come down the stretch. That's Jerry Palm, CBS senior sports writer, college football expert. Jerry, thank you so much for joining us.
Sure, anytime.
Thanks, Jerry.
All right, when we come back, we're going to take a look at the big news with the Houston Texans. We are 8 days from the NFL trading deadline, and reports are that Deshaun Watson may finally be traded before the deadline. Do you buy it, Carla?
I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it.
You're ready to see something happen.
I'm ready.
It's been a long line of limbo. Okay, we're going to look at what team is the best fit for the Texans' trade of Deshaun Watson. That up next when we return here on the Sports Map Radio Network.
the Boss.
And the Gloss.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow.
And Carla Dawson.
All right, when we went to break, we started talking about this, but the NFL trading deadline is now 8 days away. The Texans have been sitting on Deshaun Watson. They've had him on the shelf for all of this season. Clearly, they would love to trade him to get value back in return. This is one of the pivot moments. This is a milestone moment at the trading deadline. Now, they could wait. They could wait till the legal drama is done. They could wait till they have a better read on what draft picks they'd be getting, where the draft picks would be slotted. They'll know more at the end of the season. But first, the question on the table, do you see this trade coming down before the trade deadline here in the middle of the season?
Let me answer it two ways. Should it come down in the middle of the season? 100% yes, because of just what you mentioned, the legal troubles. It could get worse. The trade value could actually drop. Now, Deshaun Watson is claiming his innocence, and he is not going to settle, and he's going through this. And so, you know, we don't know what is.
There's a great deal of uncertainty.
Yes, there's a great deal of uncertainty. So there are interested teams right now. We are, you know, almost at the midway point in the season. There are teams in desperate need of quarterbacks. The reason I think it may not happen is because I have zero, in fact, negative confidence in the Texans brass. None.
Well, so the Texans brass has been, well, they've mismanaged so many things.
Everything.
And you mentioned earlier on the J.J. Watt and DeAndre Hopkins there playing for the Cardinals this weekend, beating up on the Texans. To be sure, Texans brass has much that it's worthy of scorn. But there may be more suitors in February. There may be more teams that are ready to say, we need a quarterback now, or we're willing to come in and get a quarterback and pay more. Or the legal process may have resolved itself by then, and maybe you could get more with less uncertainty. Regardless, you think the Texans should do this and do this now?
I think they should have done it when he asked for it. Had they done it when he asked for the trade in January, and there are, I mean, we won't even get into that because we've talked about it so much on the show, but he actually had every right to ask out of Houston because he had been, the trust had been broken several times within the organization. Even when he had sat down with Cal McNair, owner, at dinner and said, I just want to have some input. Do you mind letting me know? And he found out about the DeAndre Hopkins trade over Twitter, found out about Nick Caserio trade, hire, the David Culley hire over Twitter with no input, all of that. They should have done it then. They could have gotten the farm for Deshaun Watson. But now they're going to deal with this, with the legal troubles and all of that. I'm like, why are you sitting there? You've got a hot potato that's a super talent that is doing nothing for you. He shows up to the facility, does his own workout, does everything on the side. He's keeping himself in great shape. I mean, he is plug and play. He's ready to go. And the NFL is still, quote, doing their investigation. There's no signs that they're going to put him on the commissioner's exempt list. So he's not helping the Texans in any way, shape, or form right now. And the Texans honestly need every bit of help that they can get. I would think that the suitors that we're going to be talking about in a few minutes, these are teams not only that need a quarterback, but they have done their due diligence. They are getting as much information as they can to say, if we're seriously bringing in this guy, they're not doing it blindly. They are looking, what is the likelihood of when is the legal issue going to happen? What is the likelihood it'll be put on the commissioner's exempt list? They've got some intel. I am sure of it. These teams, other than the Texans, are really smart and really know how to run, and they're not going to bring in someone who is going to be kicked out of the NFL. I mean, they may not have for certain, but they have done, I believe, due diligence to be able to pull the trigger if they're ready.
To try to reduce the uncertainty, but they really don't know how that legal process will play out. I mean, there is a risk, I guess, that you could trade for him.
They'd have to feel comfortable.
The legal
process
doesn't go well, and then the NFL suspends Deshaun 4 games, 6 games next year. But Deshaun's such a talent, and it's a multi-year payout. I mean, he'll be in the league for many years playing for your team. So it gives you a really neat chance and opportunity. So let's talk about these teams, because there are several that are apparently actively discussing this opportunity with the Texans. The Carolina Panthers really struggled yesterday with Sam Darnold. They finally benched him.
Yeah, they finally benched him.
And
wow.
There's a growing consensus. Look, they took a flyer. They had a hope that this guy who was once a very highly considered quarterback, that they could sort of rehab him after the debacle of his life at the Jets. And it just doesn't look like he's a franchise quarterback.
Well, he looked – you remember, they started out the season 3-0, and then they've been 0-4 since then. But all those 0-4 games were minus Christian McCaffrey, which is a utility knife. It's a decoy. It's everything that a quarterback would need. So I'm not making an excuse for Sam Darnold, but that is a noticeable difference when McCaffrey – but McCaffrey's injured a lot. So you have to be able to have – or he's on the IR a lot. You have to be able to have confidence in your quarterback that even without McCaffrey, he can still win. And Darnold doesn't look like he's the guy for that. And Carolina was interested. Do you remember early on before they traded for Darnold, they were thinking about Deshaun Watson, but the Texans wouldn't budge, wouldn't talk to them.
Okay, so let's certainly put the Panthers on the list. And they – I mean, even – you're right – they were such a better team when McCaffrey was on the field, and Darnold was a better quarterback with McCaffrey.
Sure.
But
McCaffrey's
that's not a franchise quarterback. Franchise quarterback can win even when the star running back is out for a few games.
Even when you have a roster that looks like the Houston Texans and a coach in Bill O'Brien. Deshaun Watson did win with that situation.
Let's go to the Dolphins. Certainly they've been rumored. They have Tua at quarterback. Tua has been disappointing. On the one hand, I was thinking about Tua. He was probably overhyped and overrated when he was coming out of Alabama. Mm-hmm. Now I think he's been probably judged too quickly. I mean, he's only had about 8 or 9 starts in his career.
He's injured quite a bit.
And injuries have been a real issue for him. And so if you were the Dolphins, to get your hands on Deshaun Watson would be an incredible upgrade and really change the trajectory of that franchise.
It would. And, you know, it's the Dolphins last year looked so promising. They had a 10-win season. They went to the playoffs. And then this year, they're on a 6-game losing streak with really basically no identity. And you can't ignore a 6-game losing streak, even if it's not all on the shoulders of Tua. He's definitely not making it happen to make these guys better, that's for sure. And the Dolphins have the draft capital that the Texans seemingly are asking for in 3 first-round picks. They've got it. So that could be interesting. And I know – so. Deshaun, it is worth noting, he does have a no-trade clause. The only team that he has said, I'll go, the only thing he's blessed thus far officially has been the Miami Dolphins. Now, today it's rumored that he is open to going to several teams. So that's a good thing, too.
Yeah, it really puts the Texans in a tough spot if there's only one team and it really weakens their negotiating position. And Deshaun surely wants to get this done. So,
well, that's why all of a sudden today he's open to several teams.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Quote.
Now, the Broncos are in desperate need of an NFL starter. They've been looking and looking and looking, and the Denver Broncos are on the short list of teams for Deshaun Watson as well. They've got Teddy Bridgewater. They've got Drew Lock, but they are struggling now. And you think about all the quarterbacks that have gone through there other than the fairy tale ending for Peyton Manning. There have been a lot of names that have gone through that Broncos team, and, boy, they need to figure it out.
Isn't it funny? I mean, you've got one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time in John Elway as their general manager, and he cannot get his own position right for Denver. I mean, it rarely gets it right.
Yep.
Wow. That has always surprised me.
He was always – they were always rumored as the home for Aaron Rodgers, but – Rodgers and the Packers may figure this out. I mean, winning cures a lot of things, and they look like they're going on a great trip.
Aaron Rodgers looks happy pants now.
They are doing
6-1. He's happy pants.
Very well. And really, when you look at that NFC, the Packers may be on their way to the Super Bowl. I think they should have made it last year.
Yes, I do too.
Okay, what about the Eagles? They are struggling now. They had a loss yesterday to the Raiders. Jalen Hurts does not look like a franchise quarterback, although it's early in his career as well.
I think it's hard to judge Jalen Hurts at this point because I think the Eagles have been a mess. You know, they were a mess last year with Doug Peterson at the helm and all the drama with Carson Wentz. So they bring in Nick Sirianni, and I think we've got to give this head coach a chance because I watched the whole game yesterday with Las Vegas, and, you know, I didn't like the play calls on defense by the Eagles. There is a lot of things with Philly that need to be fixed. And I don't think it should all be on Jalen Hurts' shoulders. He's doing the best he can. The line isn't protecting him great. I'm not sure about Philly. That one I'm not. I think if they move on from Jalen Hurts, it's too early.
Yeah.
I don't think they've seen enough yet.
What about the Steelers?
Big Ben is at the tail end.
There's no succession plan behind Big Ben right now. I mean, Mason Rudolph is not your guy.
No, And, I mean, it's very likely that Big Ben is going to be hurt this season as well. And do you want to go to Mason Rudolph or do you want to go to Deshaun Watson?
That strikes me as a team, though, that might be more aggressive in the offseason than they would be at this particular point in time. And if you want to make the argument that the Texans will have more suitors, more interested parties in the offseason, I think the Steelers are one of those teams that might jump in. Perhaps even the Giants or the Redskins. I mean, the Giants might conclude that Daniel Jones is not the guy at the end of the year.
I don't know. Did you see him pull his Odell Beckham yesterday?
Well, they might try him at wide receiver,
if
that's your point.
I mean, that could be it. But, you know, look at this. Just today we've mentioned five teams who are actively needing to do something at the quarterback position. Five teams is pretty stout.
Yep.
But you also have to be able to have the draft picks that the Texans are asking for. And Deshaun is worth some first-round picks. So we'll see.
Yep.
But I'd love to see him move by next week. It would be exciting.
Okay, I want to get to one other topic. When we were going back
Bring
to
it.
The big three developments of yesterday, the big surprises.
Oh, yes.
We had the fall of the Chiefs, the improvement, seemingly, of the Raiders. There's also the rise of the Bengals. I mean, that was a huge win to beat the Ravens. I mean, just a couple of weeks ago, or last week, the Ravens were the talk of the NFL. And Lamar Jackson, and he was unstoppable.
They got every headline.
They had every headline. The Ravens were the AFC team of the week, and now all of a sudden it's the Bengals? The Bengals? Joe Burrow is a game changer.
He is a game changer, and so are his teammates from LSU that he brought along in Ja'Marr Chase and Justin Jefferson.
Yep.
I mean, three stars from that championship team at LSU. And remember, he really talked the brass into bringing in Ja'Marr Chase in the draft. They weren't so sure that he needed a receiver, but look at what that has done. That chemistry is unreal, and Ja'Marr Chase is money. Wow.
Well, and the Bengals' defense was pretty stout yesterday. They harassed Lamar Jackson all day long, and honestly, they've been under-heralded. No one's really been talking about the Bengals' defense, but I think they've got some players there. They're really putting the pieces together. I mean, that would be that franchise to turn it around. I can't remember the last time it felt like the Bengals were any good.
Since 2015, they haven't had a record like this.
Okay, I go back to Ken Anderson. That's how far I go back.
Oh, my. Don't do that to yourself. You're making yourself sick.
Now I've really shown my age. But Ken Anderson was a pretty good quarterback in those days, and they did pretty well with him. But it's an amazing story, and Joe Burrow.
He's an amazing story.
Well, he is. His comeback, he was off to a great start last year as a rookie. One of the great standout rookies of last year's class, along with Justin Herbert at the quarterback position.
Didn't have a great line.
Devastating injury.
Yeah.
And I was concerned in the offseason when the Bengals could have taken perhaps the best offensive lineman in the draft, chose to take the best wide receiver in the draft.
Yeah, they were looking at Penei Sewell. Right.
And I thought Penei Sewell was the pick because I just wanted to protect this great franchise quarterback. They finally had somebody on whom they could build the team. But Ja'Marr Chase sure looks a good pick. In fact, right now, if we had to pick our offensive rookie of the year, this guy might be that guy.
Oh, he's out there by himself, honestly, in that race.
Yep.
He is that good. The race for Chase, he's just something else. And Joe Burrow, I mean, he had over 400 yards yesterday and three touchdowns. He did have an interception. But, you know, he's gritty. He wanted to play at Nebraska. That didn't work. Went to Ohio State, was never going to see the field. Went to LSU. Barely got a chance. They took a chance on him. And now look, national championship, Heisman Trophy winner, number one draft pick, and resurrecting a franchise. Yeah. Wow.
It's a heck of a story.
It's a story.
All right. Another story yesterday was the reunion game. It was the Lions and the Rams. And
the
when we come back, we're going to tell you Jared Goff's record in games when he does not have Sean McVay as his head coach.
Ooh.
It will be his record in games with what Jeff Fisher and Dan Campbell is his head coach. And we'll tell you his record when we return here on the Sports Map Radio Network.
It's the Boss.
And the Gloss.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow.
And Carla Dawson.
All right, love the reunion game, call it the homecoming game. Jared Goff going back to the Rams, playing on their field in Los Angeles and facing his old teammates, facing Sean McVay, and it was the Rams who were victorious. But one of the sort of interesting subplots, the stat you gave me was Jared Goff's record as an NFL quarterback when he's not being coached by Sean McVay. And that record is?
0-14.
Ouch.
Ooh.
Well, so we had Jeff Fisher as his head coach for his rookie year. And Jeff Fisher was not an offensive-minded guy.
No. And Jared Goff looked like an absolute bust.
Yeah, that first year was really miserable.
100% of a bust under Jeff Fisher.
They got things turned around a bit with Sean McVay.
They went to the Super Bowl.
They went to the Super Bowl. Belichick schooled them. But they did have that moment, and it looked like things were on a good trajectory. One story that came out of this week that I had never heard or seen before was that when Sean McVay called Jared Goff to say, hey, we're going to trade you over to the Lions, apparently Goff hung the phone up on him. He didn't want to hear the end of that conversation.
Do you blame him?
Well, you're being sent to Detroit, my friend. This is like going to the end of the world.
Yay, your spa in Detroit, your beach vacation in Detroit. But, you know, like, look at the exposure, really, that happened in the Super Bowl against Tampa Bay. When Bill Belichick figured out if Jared Goff cannot hear Sean McVay in his helmet, we got this. And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah. It all unraveled very quickly.
Jared Goff's got to learn how to play without Sean McVay as his pacifier.
All right. When we come back, we're going to look closely at what Carla was doing in the rain yesterday. Yes, Carla was in the rain. All that and more next on the Sports Map Radio Network.